One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Lena did her, what is it?
Rabbit teeth.
Rabbit? Chipmunk?
Chipmunk, yeah. Feeling a little silly.
You're feeling silly? Is the wine getting to you? We're drinking some red wine after a tough Tuesday.
The Mondayest Tuesday ever. The Mondayest
Tuesday. And tomorrow's Wednesday, mm-hmm. So we're halfway through.
Halfway through.
You guys were doing it. We're making our way through the week. Tomorrow's Thursday, which is practically, tomorrow's Thursday, which is practically Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing it.
Yeah.
We can do it. We can make it together.
Sure. I like the attitude.
You know what I've been thinking about recently?
What's that?
Is re-releasing some of the episodes that we did in the very beginning. Like when the audio is pretty crap.
Okay, so like re-recording them?
Like re-recording them.
Okay.
And maybe looking back into it and doing updates if there is any. Would you guys be interested in that? I know that some of our older episodes are tough to listen to, like a little bit distracting. The audio is not great when we were recording in our closet from afar. And
I do like that idea because I have a friend who got their friend to listen to us and they're like, when is the audio going to get better? I was like, okay, thank you for the honesty.
You start current and then you work your way back because then you fall in love with us because we're much better now.
Yeah.
Fall in love with us. And then when you get to those silly first episodes, you're like, oh,
bless their heart.
Babies. Podcast babies.
Yeah, maybe we should do that.
Yeah. I'm going to look into it. I have got my next two cases filling my brain.
Okay.
All my white and gray matter is stuffed with these two cases. But yeah, let us know. Like, email us or let us know which episode you loved and maybe you wanted a little bit more because I know our research has gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
Our storytelling has gotten better.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we have nothing else to do.
No,
sure.
I mean, I've got all the time in the world.
All the time.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and get into it.
Please.
As you have seen, this is part one of two parts. This case has just haunted me for a few weeks now. And I was telling Lena before we started recording, I struggled with how to even tell this story. And to be honest, I'm not sure that I've done an adequate job at all putting it together, really. Hedley Thomas, an investigative reporter and host of the podcast The Teacher's Pet, has done some really amazing research on this case, the 1982 disappearance of Lynette Sims Dawson. And I relied heavily on his reporting. I thought it was so well done. And you'll see that the police did no investigation here.
Mm.
And so he really is what we have as like source material.
Okay.
Like actual original source material. So if you love a deep dive, go listen to season one of The Teacher's Pet on this case. It was released back in 2018. So anyway, I want to start with the victim. Lynette Joy Sims was born May 5th, 1948 in Sydney, Australia.
Aww.
That's why I said, that's funny they said nar. To her parents, Helena and Lynn Sims. She had a sister, Pat, and two brothers, Greg and Phil. Lynette and her sister, Pat, were very close. And they had like the most idyllic childhood growing up near Clovelly Beach in Sydney, which isn't too far from the iconic Sydney Opera House, actually. There's just gorgeous coastline, swimming holes, pools near the beach.
Oh, wow.
And those two beach bums were, they just spent like every day after school, school breaks, weekends, just in the sand or in the pool. Lynette was known to her friends as Lynn, so I'll start calling her that because I'm friends with her now.
Okay.
But because she was out there swimming every day, Lynn was tan. Oh. She had hair that was bleached by the sun. And when the sun went down, they would have bonfires on the beach.
Fun.
Yeah.
My kind of life.
They'd eventually return home. I mean, at some point. It was just different times, you know. They were just out all day having fun.
Mm-hmm.
She was a sports captain. I also heard that she was a marching captain. I don't know if that meant marching band or what that meant. But she seemed to be good at everything. And she wasn't just smart. She was clever, her sister said. Like, she was very clever. She was a strong character and would tell you just like it was. But she was also very gentle and kind. Lastly, but definitely not least, she was beautiful. Lynn was all the qualities you'd want in a sister or friend, which is why she attracted the attention of a young man at high school dance, Chris Dawson. She attended Sydney Girls High School. He attended Sydney Boys High School. And I bet this little crossover dance was like,
oh yeah,
what everybody looked forward to.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, we're going to see boys. Oh my gosh. But yeah, so Chris and Lynn, they were the same age. When they began dating, her mother, Helena, was immediately smitten with him.
Aw.
She was just thrilled at this prospective match for her beautiful daughter. I mean, he was beautiful. She could just see the babies and, you know, just imagine. I mean, he had model good looks. He was outgoing and ambitious. And who wouldn't want that?
Right.
The couple were married at St. Jude's Anglican Church when they were 21. And shortly thereafter, Lynn graduated nursing school from Sydney Children's Hospital. A couple years later, in 1972, Chris landed a spot on the Newtown Jets rugby team.
Oh, wow.
Along with his identical twin brother, Paul.
Okay.
More on him in a minute.
In a minute.
So with her nurse's salary and now this professional sports salary money coming in, they bought a vacant lot in the Bayview neighborhood, which was a very bougie neighborhood of the time. Probably someplace they couldn't have afforded to buy a house. So they bought a lot.
Oh, okay.
And they built a house. It was up in the hills. There were views. There were beautiful homes. So it just seemed like the perfect place to continue their life together, raise their family. But that would be a more painful journey for Lynn because she really struggled to get pregnant.
Aww.
I mean, for years she tried, and she even tried surgery to see if that would help, but it didn't seem to. It wasn't until they met with an adoption agency like 6 or 7 years later that Lynn found out she was pregnant with her first child.
Whoa, isn't that how it happened? I mean, that's how it happens a lot.
People used to say, you want a baby? Just go to an adoption agency and start signing paperwork and you'll get pregnant.
I got that all the time.
You don't know. Anyways, but thank God it happened that way for Lynn. She didn't have to go through all the things that we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple years later, they had another little girl, Sharon.
Aww.
Chanel and Sharon.
That's cute.
Yeah. And like, what could be more perfect? Like, two little girls, beautiful house on a hill. Lynn was working as a nurse at a childcare facility near her home. And now that she was finally a mom, she didn't want to be away from her girls. I mean, she adored them,
mm-hmm.
and she just wanted to spend all her time with them. So Lynn went from working full-time to down to just 3 days a week so that she could spend more time with her daughters, be present. She was devoted to her family and she wanted to watch her children grow. And she was a devoted wife. She wanted to have her, you know, dinner ready for her husband when he got home after a long day. It was just the perfect balance to make that career move. So now I should probably tell you about Chris and his twin brother. I know this seems like a little bit silly of a transition, but there's really no place that feels appropriate to start talking about Paul because he's just always been there like a skin tag.
Oh, okay.
Or a mole.
One of those. Those are pretty annoying.
So he's just always been in their relationship.
Okay.
So I've just described to you how beautiful and magical Lynn's life had become with her husband and her two children. But you should know of a strange undertone that Lynn didn't even realize was a thing.
Okay.
So to say Chris and Paul were best friends wouldn't really describe it. It's more like they were one and the same.
Identical twins.
Right. But they shared a brain, though. Like they were two people, but they were one person, really.
Interesting.
Twins have always fascinated me.
Yeah.
Especially in college when I was taking, you know, psychology and neuroscience classes, we would talk about especially identical twins because, you know, they start off as one embryo.
Yeah.
So in theory, you think that if an embryo splits, you have copy and paste two of the exact same individual, but it doesn't happen that way because of the way we develop. Because like for Daisy and Poppy, my twins, Poppy had a velamentous cord insertion. So she had a lot to overcome in the womb to get nutrients. And she's a tough little cookie. Mm-hmm. She's smaller. She has a completely different personality than Daisy. So I think that development has a lot to do with that. But Chris and Paul may have been medical marvels because they were kind of copy and paste.
Wow.
I won't take the time to talk about it in this episode, but I'll link a study in the show notes about another interesting set of twins that are kind of similar to this. Nothing to do with true crime, just if you want to be nerdy with me. So as kids, Chris and Paul were inseparable and they spoke in their own language. I don't mean like my twins that go
jibber jabber.
I love when they do that. It's so funny. What I mean is they actually didn't speak to people at all. They didn't talk to other people at all. So they only spoke to each other and they had developed their own way of communicating. And it kind of surprises me that they had this dynamic because they had an older brother.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did they have a relationship with him?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
Yeah, they did. And so it's kind of surprising to me. I don't know how much older he was, but he wasn't like an adult, you know, when they were born. It wasn't like they were it was just the two of them. Mm-hmm. But anyways, at age 5, their parents had to put them in speech therapy so that they could like learn English, like how to talk and communicate with other people.
Interesting.
Very interesting. And they needed speech therapy for a good couple of years to try and undo that weirdness that they had solidified. They mirrored each other growing up. They played the same sports, wore the same clothes, had their hair the same, had the same part-time jobs.
Wow.
I said a bit ago that Chris and Paul played for the rugby team and kind of became locally famous. Well, in 1975... the Australian ABC program called Checkerboard did an episode on twins. And of course, they featured Chris and Paul because they were, you know, famous. Lynn and Paul's wife, Marilyn, were interviewed about Chris and Paul's relationship and asked how it was, like what it was like sharing their husbands.
Yeah.
They both sounded very soft-spoken and meek when speaking about their husbands' relationships and told the producers that they thought the boys had a very sacred bond and like it was endearing and nothing weird about that at all. Mm. They didn't feel like they were sharing their husbands. Okay. And
I'm sitting here wondering that. So I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. ironically, that notion about them sharing their husbands would become a theme later on.
Okay.
I'll see if I can link to the episode of that checkerboard, because it is the perfect representation of them mirroring each other. Okay. I mean, they're doing sit-ups in complete unison while dressed the exact same, hair the exact same. At one point, they're running same legs, same arm movements. Like, it's just truly
the same
identical
person.
Chris had actually been invited to other rugby clubs, but he wouldn't accept because they weren't offering Paul a position on the team.
Aww.
So the Newtown Jets was the only team that would take them both.
Okay.
So that's why they went there. And even as adults, they shared the same attributes. They had the same car.
What?
Same color and everything. When Chris and Lynn built their house in Bayview, Paul and his wife bought a house on the same street. I mean, everything. They kept an outgoing social facade, but they were actually very secretive and private, which kind of made it hard for people to connect with them.
I'm sure.
And made other people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know when you're standing there and two people are really good friends or whatever, and you're the lone one, and they're like kind of, you know, they have mannerisms and things, and you feel like an outsider. That's how they were with everyone. It was like you just couldn't compete.
It's like, wouldn't you want to be your own person? But it sounds like they're committed to, I mean, even though it's like a biological thing, mm-hmm. it's like they're committed to this.
They were obsessed with each other, to be honest with you. Paul was very much a part of the fold when it came to Lynn and Chris's fairy tale home life, as families do. Lynn became very close with Paul and his wife over the years, of course. And I mean, they were family and they were neighbors.
Yeah.
just living right down the road. So they spent a lot of time together.
Mm.
Well, in addition to the same car, same residential street address, and having the same job as teenagers, they also had the same jobs as adults. And I'm not talking about the rugby gig. That was a good 6-year run, though. No, when their rugby career ended, they both took jobs as PE teachers at the local Cromer High School.
At the same school?
Same school.
Okay.
Yeah. And in 1979, this career move would be the catalyst for the implosion of Lynn's perfect life.
Oh, no.
Chris was still somewhat of a rugby star when he began teaching at the high school. So you can imagine his arrival on scene was pretty spectacular.
Oh, I'm sure.
To the school. He loved the attention.
Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't?
I'm not sure why his rugby career came to an end, if it was his decision or, you know, if he got, I don't know anything about rugby. Traded? Canceled? I don't know.
I don't know
what that means, but whatever it was, he loved the attention. He wasn't the only one that loved the attention, because apparently Cromer High School was a breeding ground for underage girls and young male teachers hooking up.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
The seriousness of what was going on at the high school deserves attention, but it's not something I'm going to get into here for the sake of time. This is already going to be two parts. But the Teacher's Pet podcast goes into it pretty good, and it's quite disturbing. So give that a listen if you're sick and you want to know more about that. So the environment that Chris was stepping into is that he's got all these fellow teachers hooking up with young girls.
Mm-mm.
He's got all these young girls who think he's hot stuff. How could he resist?
Oh, no.
Like, how could he resist? Everyone else was doing it. It was easy. He didn't even have to try. Well, it wouldn't take him long before he noticed one student in particular, 15-year-old Joanne Curtis.
Oh, no.
In court documents, she's referred to as JC. Okay. I'm going to call her Joanne Curtis because that's her name.
Yeah.
She's since spoken out, so I'm not like doing her dirty.
Okay.
What we know about the relationship that developed between Chris and Joanne is pieced together from students at the high school, Lynn's family, and from Joanne herself.
Hmm.
Joanne later told police that she remembered meeting Chris when he was playing tennis one day after school with a friend. She had seen him around. Like, she knew who he was, but she actually formally met him at this interaction. So Chris and Lynn had come to play in the court next to her and her friend. And I don't know how it happened, but they ended up playing doubles.
Okay.
With the two girls. Most likely orchestrated by Chris, okay. if you want to ask me about it. But Lynn got to know Joanne briefly and offered her a babysitting job for their two small girls. They had been using babysitters like on the weekends so that they can go see their friends and just have some time away or go on a date night, whatever it was. Joanne didn't have a great home life. And I don't know if this came up in conversation and that's why Lynn offered her like a job.
Tried to help her.
Yeah. I don't know how it all happened, but she saw this babysitting opportunity as a bit of a reprieve from being at home. It was very chaotic at home. Her stepdad was abusive towards her mom, and things were escalating during this time. He'd actually even hit Joanne once when she tried to step in and defend her mom. So Joanne began working for the Dawsons maybe a little more regularly than expected. Chris would see Joanne at school and make a point to talk to her. He even transferred assignments so that he could be Joanne's teacher.
Oh.
Because she wasn't in his class.
Okay.
So he finagled things around so that she was his actual student. And he could spend a whole class period with her.
Like, here's your sign.
I know. The Time and Tide Hotel in town had a bar where teachers would buy the young underage girls drinks.
What in the world?
Just a thing that was going on that nobody seemed to care about.
Batted an eye at.
Yeah. So Chris would be there with all his other teachers that were hooking up with other girls. And Joanne would be there with her friends that were getting, you know, drinks bought for them. And he would get her off to the side, you know, take her away from her friends so he could like get to know her a little more without people interfering. And she began to open up to him about her home life. Chris told her, you know, you can talk to me about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she really began to do just that. I mean, she opened up to him more and more. She talked about the abuse and she, in the beginning, looked at him as like a safe authority figure.
I'm sure.
He was her teacher. He'd let her into his home mm-hmm. to watch his children. She'd become close with the family. So she saw him as someone who maybe cared for her in a way that she never got that at home because her mom was in a really bad way and her dad wasn't really a part of her life too much. So she was
She's seeing a whole new dynamic of what life could be.
Right. She's like, wow, someone, he really cares about me. But soon the relationship became something more than a guy just trying to help out a young student.
Not surprised.
His intentions were never pure. Let's just be clear about that. The pats on the back turned into gentle rubs on the back and the hands brushing up against each other in the hallway became lingering and hand-holding. Pretty soon they were spending time together in his car.
Oh, man.
And one day he took her out to his car and he kissed her while in the parking lot by the beach. And that very day he took her to his parents' house, which was a little further out of town. And that's when he slept with her for the first time.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Come on.
From then on, it was a full-on
to his parents' house
relationship. Yeah. Yeah. Gross. Gross all around. And it became his obsession, really. By the time Joanne turned 16, that's right. Did y'all forget she was 15?
No.
16 was the age of consent at the time. The school had started catching on to the affair.
Mm.
They weren't exactly being discreet about it.
Yeah, sounds like it.
The students were the first to notice what was going on, even though Joanne says she didn't tell her friends about it. It was pretty obvious. I mean, everyone saw him go into his office and then she'd follow and the door would get shut. Or,
oh gosh.
You know, there was a couple times where someone saw her sitting on his lap. Kids even saw him dropping her off at school and kissing her before she goes into school. It's just, it was becoming like widely known.
That's so gross.
So gross. Joanne's mom soon learned about the affair when she met with the school about her daughter's poor grades.
Oh.
She's like, you know, my daughter's.
You mean he wasn't making sure she was having good grades?
I guess not. No, I guess not. Mm. But she's like, you know, what's going on here? Like, why is she making such? And they're like, listen, if your daughter wouldn't be sleeping with a teacher, you know,
she could focus on her.
Yeah, maybe she could focus on her studies. Yeah. Who knows? Well, Joanne's mom was in no condition to be dealing with this. I mean,
yeah,
she was in an abusive relationship. This is like the last thing she wants to deal with. So she called Joanne's dad to see if he'd deal with it.
Okay.
And he just said, look, stop seeing him. Like, he's married. He's got a family.
I'm sure she'll
don't be a home
respect
wrecker.
That.
Right. But by now, she had been so indoctrinated.
Okay.
She was so in love with Chris. She saw a future with him. And the threat of her dad cutting her off and not speaking to her anymore if she didn't stop dating Chris wasn't enough. She
wow.
was like, well, bye.
Wow.
Bye then.
Blinded by the light.
Yeah, this was Joanne's first boyfriend. Mm. Definitely first sexual relationship. So while there was a level of understanding that what she was doing was very wrong, there was an inherent naivety.
Okay.
You know, she was 16.
Right.
Need I remind you that Chris is still married to Lynn?
Mm.
No one's forgotten that, right?
No, I have not.
Okay. So school officials had been made aware of what was going on. Highly inappropriate relationships were frowned upon. I mean, these because of the age of consent, it wasn't exactly illegal.
Mm.
I mean, it was illegal when she was 15, but it was frowned upon and it was an inappropriate and not tolerated for students to be dating teachers. So Chris was confronted and they told him, you need to knock it off. Like, stop this right now. And Chris was like, guys, she's my babysitter. Like, she basically lives with us. She's actually moving in. Do you think my wife would let her move in if there was something going on between us?
Oh, no.
That's right. He'd propositioned Joanne to move into the home that he shared with his wife and children as their live-in babysitter. Lynn was reluctant, but she thought it was really nice what Chris was trying to do because she knew that Joanne was dealing with abuse at home.
That makes me so sad.
Yeah. So Joanne brought her school books, some clothes, and she began living with the Dawsons.
The audacity.
The audacity. Chris would make Lynn a little nightcap with a little something something in it, and she would knock out.
Oh my gosh.
And he'd walk down the hall and bang his side piece.
He just was doing what he wanted.
Yeah. He was doing everything he wanted, and he did not care about the consequences at all. All of this going on under Lynn's nose, it was like the worst kept secret in town. Paul and his wife knew about it. They knew about the affair. I mean, Paul was also hooking up with students from the school.
I thought you were going to say with Joanne.
Oh, well, I actually left this part out, but we'll get into that later.
Okay.
Now that you bring it up, I'm going to have to include it now. So now at some point before she went missing, Lynn began to tell friends that she was getting very uncomfortable in her own home because, you know, she'd be in the kitchen cleaning up after dinner and she'd look over in the living room and there's Chris, Joanne, and their two children all snuggled up together reading books. And she was like, wait a minute. There's something very wrong with this picture.
Right.
This is my home, my family. She didn't like it. It felt very wrong
to her.
That
is, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so, wow.
One day, it came to a head when Lynn came home and Joanne was swimming in their pool naked with her swimming suit hanging up, dangling on a chair or something. And she was supposed to be watching the girls. Well, Lynn went inside the house to be like, where are the girls? And her husband was in the shower.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Interesting how that all... That's gross.
It is
that
gross.
That feels so slimy and gross. So she went outside and she told Joanne to get her things and get lost.
Yes.
She said something like, I know you're taking liberties with my husband and I don't appreciate it. You're fired. Joanne packed a bag and walked down that hill to the main road and Chris swooped down and picked her up in his car.
And brought her back to the house?
No. He took her to Paul's house where she began living.
Oh.
So, there was speculation because of how Chris and Paul behaved as teenagers and as adults, sharing girls and such. Mm. There was speculation that Paul was having his own fun with Joanne, but she never admitted to that.
Okay.
So I left that out, but you brought it up. So I'm gonna insert it here.
Okay. So
she started living with Paul.
Okay.
And his wife. She wasn't babysitting them for them. She was just hiding.
A place where Chris could go and...
So not really because the children.
Okay.
So Joanne would try and stay out of sight. She would go hide outside while Paul's kids were getting ready for bed. And then she'd come in, go to sleep. And then she'd get up in the morning and go hide in the bush while they're getting ready for school and leave.
It just seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think at this point, Joanne was starting to get tired of being a dirty little secret.
Right.
Hiding in the bushes, staying with her lover's brother and his wife and kids, but really had these weird times she could be in and out. By all accounts during this time, though, Lynn thought that Chris had pretty much broken things off with Joanne.
Okay.
She had fired her. She'd got her out of her home. Mm-hmm. And she was willing to work things out with her husband. She didn't want to lose her husband. She loved him. She loved her family, this beautiful life that they'd built together. She begged him to stay and work it out. She even begged him to try marriage counseling.
Oh. So do you know what Paul's wife was saying? Like, did she...
She was team Paul and Chris.
No.
Through and through. And, you know, Joanne said in an interview once that if Paul's wife knew about his affairs, Paul's affairs...
Right.
She just turned a blind eye. She either didn't know at all or she knew and she didn't care.
But why?
Because Joanne said she witnessed him with other girls. Like, she saw Paul and other girls with her own two eyes.
But why did she not care? Like, was she doing her own stuff?
I have no idea. Some people, Lena, can do that. Just like, oh, I've got this status.
Yeah.
I've got this home. I've got my girls. I've got two incomes. And it's easier to just say, well...
Do what makes you happy.
He's sleeping with someone else and...
I have this beautiful house.
Right.
Okay.
That doesn't register with me, but I do know some people like this.
Okay. I don't like it.
Even though Lynn thought things were gonna get back on track, he was very distant towards her. I'm not sure why she thought he had broken things off at that time. Maybe he told her he did.
Yeah, he probably told her.
She believed him. But by December of 1981, the marriage was in shambles. Lynn had bruises all over her legs, arms, all over. And people were taking note. I mean, some even witnessed Chris abusing Lynn with their own eyes. There was the time that an old babysitter walked in on Chris whipping Lynn in the back with a tea towel.
Oh, my gosh.
And then she walked into the kitchen and then Chris quickly walked out and acted like it just didn't happen. The time Chris pushed Lynn's face down in the dirt by the pool and she told her friend Anna that she thought she was going to die because she couldn't breathe.
Oh, Lord.
Once she was having a dress made in the city and the dressmaker saw bruises all over her body as she was measuring her. And even though it was her first time meeting Lynn, she's like, what in the hell have you done? Like, she was like, what have you done?
Yeah.
She didn't know Lynn from Adam, but she just was like,
it was
that
shocking.
Big of a, it was that shocking that she had to comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lynn's own family even saw the bruises and knew Chris had hurt her. But Lynn had always commented that she set him off. She must have done something to make him really cross, and it was probably her fault. Classic domestic violence victim mentality, unfortunately. Lynn remained hopeful that she could make her husband love her again.
Mm.
She tried to look pretty. She had put on some pounds from having kids, God forbid.
Ugh.
So she would buy sexy lingerie, hoping that maybe he'd look at her like he used to, or look at her like he looked at Joanne.
Ugh, breaks my heart.
So December 22nd, 1981, her dreams were dashed when she arrived home to an empty house.
Oh?
There was a note saying that Chris was leaving her.
Oh, wow.
This goodbye note said something like, don't paint too black a picture of me to the children or something like that. It's unclear whether Lynn knew at that point that he had gone away with Joanne or if she just thought he was leaving her.
Gotcha.
Leaving her.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what he did. He went away with Joanne.
Mm-hmm.
They had packed bags and they were going to move to Queensland to start a new life. Lynn had kicked Joanne out of the house, so, you know, she couldn't be around or just down the hall anymore.
And he was going to go get and do what he wanted.
Right. And he had actually quietly transferred to another school by this point.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
A whole plan.
Uh-huh. So he wasn't even able to brush up against her in the hallways at school anymore. And he wanted to be with her. He wanted to be with her. Chris and Joanne were halfway to their destination when Joanne began to panic. Now she's 17 years old and she didn't want to leave her sisters, her family. She didn't want to leave Sydney, the place that she'd always called home. I mean, she was very young. She was graduated and she had the world at her fingertips.
Right.
And she's running away with this married man. So she starts panicking and breaking out into hives, and she tried to end the relationship in the car, basically, but he had to turn around and take her back home to Sydney because she was like, I can't do this.
Oh, I'm surprised he actually turned around.
Exactly. So she didn't want to run away like that. And he was not going to end the relationship either. Yeah. So she tried to break it off, but he was not really going to let that happen. When he came back home, Lynn thought that he'd had a change of heart.
Oh.
So I think to her, she thought of it as he thought he needed to leave, but when he left, he realized he couldn't do it, and he came back home to his family. I think that's how it came off to her.
Sure.
She didn't know that it was Joanne.
There
that
was a separate interaction.
Yes, this
going
whole
on.
Other dynamic going on.
Yeah.
She also didn't know that Chris and Joanne managed to spend some time together around Christmas.
Oh.
And New Year's Eve. How he pulled that off. I think for the New Year's Eve one, he was like planning a boating trip with some friends, and that was his cover story for that. But Lynn was just heartbroken at this massive crater that had formed in her marriage, but she still loved Chris. I mean, she
the father
she
of her
so
children
hopeful yeah that things could get back on track, and he'd finally agreed to go to marriage counseling with her. So just the fact that he agreed to do that showed her that he was willing to work.
That there was some hope.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Friday, January 8th, 1982, Lynn and Chris attended their counseling session before Lynn returned to work that day. When the couple returned to the child care center, Sue, her coworker and friend, was surprised to see Lynn and Chris holding hands. I mean, it was a significant interaction because she didn't often see them together. And when she did, she didn't see them holding hands. So she knew they were coming from counseling, and she's like, wow, must have gone well.
Yeah.
Whatever Chris said in that counseling session had convinced Lynn that there was a renewed devotion to their marriage, because Lynn kind of gushed about it to Sue when she got back to work, that it had gone really well and everything was going to be fine. Sue said goodbye to Lynn as Lynn was closing down for the evening. Her other friend and coworker said goodbye to her, and they could have never known that that would be the last time anyone would see Lynette Dawson. And that's where I'm going to have to leave you for part one.
Oh, man. Leave us on the edge of our seats.
I know. But if you're on our Patreon, part of the fam, you can listen right now. Happy birthday to you. Yeah, so there's a lot more to get into. I got lots more notes, lots more to talk about.
I can't even end this episode right because I need...
I know.
I just need to keep
You just want to hear the rest
yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
I know.
Okay, that was great. Let's do it again sometime and go.
Let's do it. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs, or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.